back to the Maggie Dawn Show. This is the voice of producer Anya. Just jumping in briefly at the top to give you our Civic Media Ride into Spring text to win contest word of the hour so that our dear guest host, who's doing a great job, Nick Kovac, does not have to do all this extra stuff. I'm just stepping in to let you know that today's 3 p.m. word, let me make sure I'm getting this right. Yes, today's 3 p.m. word is win, W-I-N, win, just like we want the Packers to do, just like we want the Brewers to, just like we want all of our Wisconsin teams. And you have the chance to win a bike, a blender, or, and or, a trip to the Chula Vista Resort in the Wisconsin Dells. With that, I'm going to hand things back to our fantastic guest host and his guest, Nick. Take it away.
Thank you, Anya. Nick Kovac here hosting for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show on Civic Media. Our last guest had young daughters. Actually, so does Tyler. We didn't talk about Tyler's daughters. Matt has a young daughter. I've got a couple. So I guess we all want to win that water park. Who doesn't like a good water park? Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Nick, for having me here. And if you want to talk about Wisconsin Dells for a half hour, I'm more than happy to do that. Big fans in the Wild household. Big Dells fans over here.
Now, of the natural beauty of the water parks, both, all of it?
Mainly, yeah, the kitschy water parks. The kitschier, the better. If you really lean into the whole Dells experience, I'm talking, you know, haunted houses. I'm talking the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum, stuff like that. We just eat that stuff up every summer.
Yes. So that's, you know, the personal and the professional with Matt. It's hard to tell the difference, I think, because you're so much of your website, Milwaukee Record, is about your personality, right? And your reactions to things. Did that just happen organically? I know you started with The Onion, right? So tell us about how you got your start.
That's right. I started my first kind of like real deal writing job. I guess I've been writing professionally now for over a decade. In 2011, I was the city editor of the AV Club Milwaukee. This was the regional version of the AV Club, which at the time was packaged in the back of The Onion, back when The Onion printed, and you could find a new edition of The Onion in Milwaukee and Madison and all over the place every week. And so I was, the AV Club, which was kind of the more serious arts and entertainment coverage. They had all these regional offices, Milwaukee, Chicago, Madison, of course, where The Onion began, Twin Cities, all over the country. And I was the Milwaukee city editor for a couple of years. And I kind of got in kind of when things were slowly sinking. And fast forward 2 years later, and the Milwaukee version of the AV Club was the last one standing. Mm-hmm. I honestly do think they just forgot that we existed and just kind of kept publishing for like 6 months. And they're like, oh, wow, we still have a paper in Milwaukee. We're still printing in Milwaukee. We got to get rid of that. So they did. That was around 2013. And after that, I was like, gee, I need a job. I need to do something. And even before I thought of doing something on my own, once the end of the AV Club was announced, tons of people reached out to me and said, hey, you know, once you do something new, we'll be there for you. We'll advertise with you. We'll write for you, whatever. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm going to do something on my own then. Luckily, very, very luckily, I hooked up with a writer who had written for the AV Club Milwaukee and other places, Tyler Moss. I know he got mentioned earlier. Yeah. And Tyler and I formed Milwaukee Record. We launched about, I don't know what, 4 months after the end of the AV Club. We launched April 7th, 2014. And that means just in a few weeks, we will be celebrating our 10-year anniversary, believe it or not. So I've been doing Milwaukee Record along with Tyler for 10 years. And it's kind of a crazy, bizarre dream job. I'm so lucky to be able to do it, and kind of can't believe that we've been doing it this long.
So the 10-year anniversary, is there going to be a party that all of Maggie's listeners are invited to? What's going to happen?
We've got a couple things under wraps. We're doing a lot of like smaller events throughout the year, and we do a lot of events throughout the year. Maybe we can talk about that later, but we're going to do a few smaller events. There may be some participation from City Hall. I don't know. Maybe you've heard some scuttlebutt about that, Nick, but
are you getting a proclamation?
I don't want to say it, but we may be making it official. So very excited about that. And yeah, just a series of kind of smaller events throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. And now the, I assume when you worked for the Onion, you must have gone to the toilet paper museum a few times, right?
Toilet paper museum? No, where is the toilet paper museum?
It was just the apartment where all the Onion editors lived in Madison, and they threw parties. Maybe you have to be older to know about that. I knew about that back in 2000 times.
Okay. Yeah. I never got down to the Madison office. Like I said, I think they honestly forgot they had a paper in Milwaukee, and that's why we hung around as long as we did.
Yeah. No, I never wrote for the Onion, but I lived in Madison for a year, and it was just their apartment where they all lived. But I think if you were supposed to bring toilet paper from around the world. So it literally was a toilet paper. They had it everywhere, and they would sign it, and I guess they would probably use it too. I'm not sure how it all worked.
I got to steal that idea. That sounds great for our Milwaukee record offices. I mean, who doesn't need some more TP, really?
Right, right. And especially from Prague or anywhere, you know?
Absolutely.
All over the world. So I think, is your tagline still something, something in gentle sarcasm?
It is, music, culture, gentle sarcasm. Just one of many things I thought of in 10 seconds in the shower back in 2013, and we've just been kind of saddled with it ever since. So
yeah, well, you and Tyler definitely have a unique voice. I enjoy it. I've been on just like with Dan, you know, I've been on the other side of you. I was there in Lake Park Pavilion in the Marshall Coles Room for the famous Pokemon meeting, which you not only wrote an article about, but you did sound clips from. Tell us about that. I mean, I'll never forget that. I probably would never have forgotten that meeting anyway, but there's something about being part of something so weird and special, but then having someone memorialize it that really, it gets in your memory twice then.
Yeah, this was back in 2015, I believe. Yep. Pokemon Go, which was a mobile game you played on your phone, had just come out, and you could actually go out to these real world locations and find and catch Pokemon or whatever, and Lake Park was, unbeknownst to Lake Park and Milwaukee, Lake Park was a big hotspot to find all these Pokemon. The developers had just randomly chosen Lake Park. And so that summer, Lake Park became incredibly swamped with, I mean, you know, it wasn't any joke. I mean, there were thousands of people, at its height that summer. It was a ton of people walking through Lake Park. And so it caused a big stink. Mm-hmm. And I got a kick out of it. I thought it was hilarious. Yeah. Everybody got involved. It was like, how can we, you know, do we ban this? They're ruining our park. They're trampling down the grass. And, you know, I mean, that wasn't a lie. I mean, there was some damage to the park because there were just so many people, and that park was not built for that many people. And yeah, I think it all kind of culminated at this big meeting in Lake Park, below the bistro there. And yep, you were there. And it was just, you know, the mass hysteria on both sides,
yes,
which was just fantastic. It was, I remember on the official side, you know, behind the table, most of the meeting was spent introducing various officials.
There were a lot of us.
There were about 37 of you, but, you know, you were there. There were other, you know, city officials, Lake Park officials, police, county people. Yeah. It was just ridiculous. And so there was that kind of silliness. And then, you know, people got up and started talking and, you know, that really loved the Pokemon game. People were crying. People yes. were very, very upset at the thought of that this game could be taken away from them. And, you know, fast forward, I don't know, 4 months later and everyone forgot about it anyway.
That's true. Yeah, it did just sort of go away, possibly through some of the activism of the county. Although I now that we're talking about it, I kind of miss it. You know, maybe it was a few too many people, but now maybe there's not enough people in the park. We need a happy medium somehow.
Absolutely.
You mentioned that you loved it. You heard, you might have heard Tyler Dunn talk about how he's, you know, since he's become a reporter, he stopped rooting for football. And I think I might believe him. I don't believe him that the players aren't and coaches aren't affected by his reporting. He just doesn't want to admit that. It's just a weird old school journalism thing. But I don't think you have that hang up. You're okay with your journalism affecting who you report on. Am I?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to say the point of it, but I guess we play kind of fast and loose that way. And we play fast and loose with something you were talking about at the top of the segment here of like inserting ourselves mm-hmm. Into the piece.
Your personality.
And yeah, our personality and, you know, just kind of my life too. And in a weird way, that's kind of like the ideal Milwaukee Record piece where it's something informative, and you know, it's something perhaps funny to get a couple chuckles, and it's something personal, mm-hmm. And yet it affects, you know, everyone in the city. And I find those things are so fun to write about, and you know, getting like real specific about things in Milwaukee that are almost kind of like inside jokes to people kind of in the know. And they'll be like, oh, I know that. A good example. I mean, it's a silly example, but the snow pile that yes. Typically builds up every winter outside the Marcus Performing Center, their big parking garage or parking structure there on Water Street. For a couple of years, there's always this big snow pile. And for a couple of years, we've run these polls like, when is it going to melt? Mm-hmm. And at first, you know, I thought it was just this dumb thing that I kind of kept track of and I kind of noticed. And then one year we ran it. And sure enough, you know, there were so many people that were like, oh, my goodness, I thought I was the only one that you know, paid attention to that dumb snow pile. And so, again, that's a real silly example. But I think it is a good example of kind of inserting ourselves into it and kind of doing these things that, you know, maybe some people may think of as inside jokes. And it turns out there's a whole lot of people in Milwaukee that also.
Has anyone ever gone out and tried to melt or move some of the snow in order to win the pool? Is that, have you seen
Well,
that?
I mean, talk about, you know, our coverage affecting the subjects we're talking about. I don't know this for certain. I have not heard from the Marcus Performing Center brass, but I know they are aware that we've been doing this for a couple years. I mean, we have T-shirts, for goodness sake. Right. You can buy those T-shirts on our website. We got a big pile, Milwaukee Record Snow Pile shirts. I know that they're aware of it. And again, I don't know this for sure, but this year, and I think last year too, they at some point knocked the pile over and kind of spread it out in front of the entire parking structure, thus kind of robbing us of the glorious giant pile. And at this point, because it's been such a bizarre winter, there's currently no snow on the ground. Maybe there will be tonight. But that's another fascinating example of our coverage affecting very important things in Milwaukee.
Well, yeah, we're going to go to a break in a few seconds here. But we've got a list of things we might talk about coming up off the break. You know, you've obviously affected the mayor of West Dallas. You've affected Wu-Tang Clan. You have affected Corey Feldman. You've affected, well, there's a list of things. We'll only have a few more minutes, but we'll come back from the break and we'll talk about why Milwaukee is different because of the Milwaukee Record and Matt Wild and Tyler Maas. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. This is not the voice of guest host Nick. This is instead producer Anya again, just checking in with you at the top of this segment to let you know what a feeling it would be if you won our text competition, our Ride into Spring text competition. Your word of the hour for the 3 p.m. hour is win, W-I-N, win, win, win. And what could you win? A bike, a blender, or a trip to Chula Vista. With that, I'll throw back to Nick and Matt. Nick and Mac, have you ever been to the Chula Vista? It sounds like Matt's been all over the Dells.
It does.
Is he eligible? He's participating in the show. Is he eligible to win this hour?
That's a really good question.
I've been all over it. So, yeah.
The council is out.
Fingers are crossed because one thing about the Dells, it's not exactly cheap.
Matt Wild writes for the Milwaukee Record. I used to write for the Onion AV Club in Milwaukee. And, I was starting to ask you if you root for things. Tyler claims he doesn't root for the Packers, and I do believe him. You obviously root for the Packers, so do I. I even wrote a bunch of articles for the Packers. You do have sort of a for you back in 2017, I think. You do have a sports page. But do you find yourself rooting for Milwaukee to be different, and then does your coverage kind of push that in certain ways?
I think so. I mean, kind of one of the things that has been behind our coverage from really day one is kind of like, hey, let's act like we've been here before. Like Milwaukee, you know, that's certainly evolved over the past decade. But especially in the early days, there was still this kind of, you know, little guy syndrome, this, you know, like, oh, gosh, we're just little old Milwaukee here. And oh, yay, we made this list of, you know, we're the 17th best city to wear sweatpants in or something like that, something ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I think we always kind of poked and prodded at that sort of thing and kind of the attention that those silly things got. Though, you know, here we are again, like I said, 10 years later. And last night, Milwaukee had its big debut on the episode of Top Chef, which was a huge, huge thing. And that's amazing. It's certainly, we've never tried to be like, you know, just old grumps saying like, oh, why are we getting all excited about this? But there has been that kind of coverage, and especially a lot with our music coverage too, of like, hey, let's, you know, let's treat, you know, the music that's being made in Milwaukee as, you know, what it is. It's music that should be kind of out on a national level and kind of regarded as such. And that's certainly a thing that I think our coverage has affected over the years. And it's something that's really kind of the bedrock of our coverage is Milwaukee music. Yep. It's the first thing kind of in our slogan, music, culture, gentle sarcasm. And just the Milwaukee music scene, especially these days, is just at a really, really high level. And there's just tons of excitement surrounding it. For bands and fans and just so many good local acts and local artists. And that's something that I know we've affected over the years, that, you know, we're having bands and artists come up to us and say like, wow, like you guys wrote about us when no one else was. And you know, you were the first thing that someone had ever written about us. And it really helped us. It really helped us kind of get our name out there a little bit. And I'm not saying, you know, like we made these bands or anything like that, but it certainly helps. And, you know, all these years later, you know, sometimes we'll come across a band's bio and they're, you know, quoting from, you know, our piece extensively, and they've gone on to bigger and better things. Like I said, I'm not claiming we made any bands, but I think we've certainly helped. And that's very, very flattering and very, very deserving for so many Milwaukee groups and artists.
Yeah. So music and culture, that, well, music especially, that's your passion. That's your bread and butter. That's what you write about the most. But you do, you'll dip your toes in the waters of some, you know, controversies about how to promote Milwaukee, how to talk about Milwaukee, but it's gentle sarcasm, kind of like where Tyler stuck it in the Buffalo Bills eye, but they still talk to him because, you know, speaking truth to power, sometimes power doesn't mind so much. So you did mention to me you had some consistent criticisms of Newwaukee, which is a group of what I used to call professional young professionals. What's their job? Oh, they're professional young. No, but what's their job? No, they're professional at being young professionals. And I don't know if that was your, what was your critique, but, you know, they became friends of yours or colleagues of yours. They reacted to your critique.
Yeah, that was the early days. It was kind of two groups kind of in tandem. It was Newwaukee and Art Milwaukee.
Yes.
And the Art Milwaukee was probably more what I was kind of harping on a lot. Just some of the things that they were doing. This was during the heyday of like placemaking.
Yes.
This was the big buzzword at the time. This was, you know, early 2010s or something like that. And there was just so many things that I thought they were doing that kind of ignored like all the stuff that was already going on in the city and kind of just trying to create their own weird little bubble. And I look back on some of that and maybe I was, a little too harsh or maybe I was a little too grumpy. But having talked to some of those folks over the years and, you know, I don't think there's any animosity. I don't know, though at some point I think, you know, they wanted to beat me up. But I think over the years, tensions have cooled.
Yes.
And I know talking to a few of them, they've said like, yeah, your coverage actually like, you know, at the very least gave us kind of a tough skin.
Yeah.
And at best kind of made us kind of rethink or really think harder about what we do and how we do it. And, you know, like I said, there was some, you know, feathers ruffled here and there, but and again, I don't know, maybe I was a little too rough, but it was nice to hear. And like I said, there's no hard feelings these days.
Yeah, and I do think it really does matter. It was kind of when I talked to Bob McGinn 10 years ago, I was thinking about it from my own perspective. I'm not a professional football player, but I was at the time a professional politician. And these things don't happen in a vacuum. I mean, even if someone's not actively, gently sarcasming you, like just the knowledge that you're being covered and anything you say might be contextualized by somebody else with the power to make fun of you or point out that you might be wrong. It's going to affect. I mean, if you're going to think twice. Now that can be a bad thing. It can be paralyzing. If you're terrified of criticism, then you know, the classic cliche of a politician, a bureaucrat or other powerful person afraid of their own shadow doing nothing so that they don't get criticism. But I do think it's a back and forth and it's got to be there. And if you're not being covered, then like what you're doing doesn't matter. And then then you do it differently.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, again, this was kind of early 2010s. There were a series of these big conversations at the Pabst Theater. I forget what they were called, something like envisioning the scene.
Oh, yeah, and that was actually Historic Milwaukee put those on.
Yeah, these were, yeah. I know, and this is a funny thing, too, about, you know, talking about all these things that I critiqued back in the day. Like, yeah. Years later, I'll bump into someone and be like, you know, I was part of that group that you were trashing, and now, of course...
In this case, my wife was part of it. So,
your wife,
but
yeah.
That's okay. Truth to power, you know. Matt. Go right ahead. We have one more minute left, so tell us about envisioning the scene.
But yeah, I think I was pretty critical of that, too. It felt, you know, it was hyped as this big thing, like this big summit of important Milwaukee people, and we're going to really hash things out, and it just kind of felt like a, you know, like... I don't know, a little too insider baseball, and you know, let's get some real powerful people up there and the rest of us can just listen to them gab for a while. And I kind of wrote some pieces about that. And, you know, perhaps that affected it as well. But like I said, yeah, years later, it's like, oh, yeah, that's your wife is involved.
Well, I hope I don't get in trouble at home for saying this, but you weren't wrong. You weren't wrong.
Oh, all right. Well, you said it. I didn't.
But I do think I do think and you can agree with me or not, but I think what Doors Open Milwaukee and what that's become, what Historic Milwaukee's doing, there's some really amazing stuff. And envisioning the scene was interesting, but probably not a sustainable vision for an ongoing activity.
And I should give a big shout out too. I know they don't do it anymore. They sold it off to another group, but the Downtown Night Market, which was a new Milwaukee thing, yes. Clearly a huge success, and they clearly did that right and had a lot of success with that.
Two organizations in Milwaukee made better by Matt Wild's gentle sarcasm. So keep it coming.
I'll
take it.
Welcome back to The Maggie Dawn Show with your guest host, Nick, and his guest, Jeremy. We're going to get to them in just a second, but at the top of this segment, I wanted to let you know that you can still enter this hour for our Ride into Spring Text to Win contest, whatever we're calling it now. Your word for this hour is win, W-I-N. If you text win into us through the app, you have the potential, the opportunity, the possibility, if you will, to win a bike, a blender, or a trip for four, I believe it is, to the Chula Vista in the Wisconsin Dells. With that, we're going to turn things back over to today's guest host for the Maggie Dawn Show, Nick. Take it away.
Thank you, Anya. Anya, thank you to Civic Media. Thank you to Maggie for going on vacation so I could guest host the show. It's been a great bit of fun for this hour and a half. There's a half hour left, and our theme on this show has been independent media, not the big newspapers that aren't as big as they used to be. The media landscape is changing, and we had Tyler Dunn on. Of Go Long TV, TD.com. We had Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. We had Matt Wild of the Milwaukee Record. And now we have Jeremy Janine, who I think precedes all of them with his project, Urban Milwaukee. Jeremy, tell us about how Urban Milwaukee got started, how you got to Milwaukee. I believe MSOE is the reason you're here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Nick. It's a story of falling backwards into a job, I guess, or a career. Or a calling, however you want to phrase it. Urban Milwaukee started, you were right, with me moving to MSOE, or moving to Milwaukee to go to MSOE. Those across the state might know that Milwaukee School of Engineering isn't known for a journalism school. In fact, it doesn't have such a thing. I went to school for Management Information Systems right in downtown Milwaukee. There was another individual, Dave Reed, who had moved to Milwaukee from Iowa, who had a similar background about 10 years before me, doing IT stuff. We were both interested in cities, like, hey, blogs are this thing. We both were doing it independently. We end up merging. Slowly but surely, Bruce Murphy from Milwaukee Magazine joins us full time as an editor. And now, fast forward almost 15 years, here we are.
And at the time, I'm trying to remember, because I think you started around the time I was also starting as a politician. What you said, 15 years? You started in 09 or 10?
June of 2008, so you beat us out the door by a couple months.
I did, just barely beat you out the door. Then I was elected in April of 2008. But were you at the time, and you would obviously remember better than me, but I seem to think that you were kind of a bloggers with a mission more than a, and you've kind of almost become a borderline replacement for the paper of record. I think you've become the City Hall news source of record. I think you cover committee meetings more regularly than the Journal Sentinel. But I don't think that was your intent, right? You were just trying to make a more walkable, dense city. Is that fair? Or
absolutely, yeah. That's absolutely correct. We started with this this is a passion project for us. We're going to write a couple articles a month. I think our first month in front of me a couple years ago, we published something like 4 articles and we had a couple thousand views and we felt really good about that. And now we do that usually in the morning or an afternoon.
So what shifted there? Would you say that you were filling a vacuum that the Journal was starting to leave, or was it just a natural progression of, well, I thought I cared about these 2 or 3 things, but now that I'm covering City Hall and the county courthouse, and I suddenly realize I care about everything they do.
Absolutely, that's kind of how it happened, or I guess the result of what happened. How it happened was, yes, going to those committee meetings. It also happened that we decided, hey, I think there's advertising money in this. And later, really, we figured out there's membership money. And let me be clear, there's not a lot of money in journalism. But we started to rub 2 nickels together and try and make a dime. Mm-hmm. And we started building towards that. And then we got a huge vote of confidence when Bruce Murphy was like, hey, I think you guys have potential. I want to join your publication. Let's try and create a real independent, legitimate news source, an alternative to what's happening, because unfortunately there's, as you hit on, cuts across the industry.
Yeah. And in fact, yeah, the Journal, or not, the Gannett, which owns the Journal Sentinel, just cut the AP, which we'll have to figure out what that effect is. And for the record, there's still some excellent reporters for the Journal Sentinel. It's not like they don't exist, but there's just a lot less of them than there used to be. So each reporter is covering so much more than they used to. So they're not able to provide the coverage that you used to. I mean, there used to be a Journal and a Sentinel, and reporters from both, I'm told, this is before my time, would be waiting outside in the hallway trying to both write the better story. And in the same way that I think a journalist can affect a politician, journalists affect each other. I mean, are you aware of, do you think of the other guests I've had on today as your competition, or do you think of the Journal Sentinel as your competition, or how do you see yourself?
I don't think of it in the sense that Dan Schaefer's doing the recombobulation area, that Matt Wild is doing Milwaukee Record. They are competition and that they're news sources. I think we each have our own lane.
Yeah.
So it's not like we're directly competing. I think the same thing about the Business Journal and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel as well. And I think you made the right distinction there on the Journal Sentinel. There's the Journal Sentinel, the company, and then there's the actual human being reporters and editors that are doing the work. Mm-hmm. And they deserve praise, and the company, Gannett, their overlord, deserves all the criticism they get and more.
Yeah.
So yeah, we view them as competitors, although I don't think it's a nasty competition. It's a healthy competition. If the highest praise I can give is to someone like Mary Spicuzza, who I think mm-hmm. pushed me to become a better reporter.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, and I, you know, I've kind of alluded to the stuff that you were passionate about. Let's talk about it. It's public transportation. It's the streetcar in particular. I mean, tell us why you, as a young student of management information systems, why you cared about a streetcar.
Yeah, I live downtown. I needed to get around downtown, so it seemed obvious in that sense. But for me, the turning point in the summer of 2006, I went and spent a month in Germany as a study abroad program. And it was eye-opening seeing in Kassel, Germany, how their transit system worked, how their development patterns work, what a real lively, walkable city it could be. Now, I went when Germany was hosting the World Cup, so they were putting on a great show, mm-hmm. but it was just obvious to me, like, hey, if you have these different tools to connect up your city, it becomes a much more friendly and welcoming place to be in for everyone.
All right, so Germany, for once again, influencing Milwaukee. That's good to know. And you made T-shirts. I have a T-shirt from back in 2008 or 9. I couldn't find it, so I wore my Great Lakes T-shirt instead, but... You know, at first when you had, I guess like maybe you had, before Bruce Murphy came on, maybe you were more of an advocacy blog than a news site, I suppose. So you were pushing hard, and I think, didn't Mayor Barrett tell you that you generated some of the, you helped influence him to get the streetcar going? I mean, he was already committed to it. There was federal money. There's a long history there that precedes him even. But I think there was a lot of angst among a lot of politicians. I was there. I mean, I can was obvious, but certainly on the inside, there was definitely angst. Should we do it? Should we not do it? We're getting so much criticism. And you were really, your goal was to push politicians to do it, right? You made no bones about that. You were not objective in the classic sense.
The thing that we really did there, and it's something that unfortunately we didn't get back to, something that we want to get back to real soon, actually, was we allowed people to weigh in on the issue. You know, they put in their address. It wasn't just a form letter they were generating, and we generated 3,000 responses. I can't remember the exact percentage off the top of my head, but something like 80% of them were city residents that everyone gave their address. And then breaking it down from that, like of those 3,000 that we generated, something like 3/4 were in favor. There was no real form letter that was created. It wasn't this massive campaign that you see like an Uber or a Lyft attempt to pull off in cities. It was just a simple, I am for the streetcar or I am against it. And then we put dot, dot, dot and encourage people to fill it in. And that was such a polarizing issue. The angst inside City Hall was palpable outside of City Hall as well, mm-hmm. that a lot of people wanted to make their voice heard. We did a similar thing for what became Fiserv Forum, more targeted at the state level than at the local level. And with that, we learned that, hey, people being politicians don't like getting bombarded with emails that aren't from people in their district. So we pushed pause on doing that to refactor and figure out like, hey, okay, we have your address when you fill this out. Now let's route it to the right person. And we hope to be doing that sometime in the, I don't want to say near future, but in the future again, on lots of issues to allow people to really contact those that represent them. I mean,
lots of issues. Can you give us a sneak preview of what you think is going to be hot that we should be ready to hear, City Hall should be ready to hear about?
Well, I think in an ideal world, you should be, as an informed media consumer, you should be able to read an article. And if it's about something that's about to be voted on, right. It'd be a special kind of direct connection between the readers and the voters and the politicians to be able to immediately provide feedback on that. I think that there's some attempts that have been done to do that through Legistar, particularly during the pandemic. They've been kind of false starts. There was a lot of feedback and then people went back in person. But I think you as a politician that, you know, your meetings are all in this 9-to-5 window when a lot of your constituents were working.
Right.
It'd be a great way to allow people to have more outreach.
Well, one thing I like about your coverage, and maybe it has to do with your training as an academic when you were in college, but you don't just, I mean, there are some certain controversial issues where citizens are going to come with preordained opinions. Do you like this? Do you not like it? But really the job of a journalist, even if you have an opinion yourself, which you often do, is to provide information, context, so that you're not just having an abstract opinion, you're reacting to facts. And then if the citizens react to facts, the politicians are more likely to as well. So I know, you know, you don't just want the streetcar, you want public transit to work. The answer to how does public transit work the best isn't always easy. You've done some really detailed articles in the past about like how the county should charge for buses. And in some cases, I think you've convinced them that what they thought was a good idea wasn't a good idea just because they read your article and realized, oops, maybe this isn't going to work.
Yeah, I think in 2012, there was a reactionary proposal to something the transit union wanted. Mm-hmm. The bus drivers were experiencing an issue with, and this is going to sound crazy now, but there used to be transfers given out on paper.
I remember them.
The bus driver would rip on. And now today that's all app-based or it's on a little card and stored. But there used to be fraud associated with that, or at least the perception that there was fraud. We're seeing issues related to that still percolating with transit in terms of New York City and the National Guard and all that. That's outside of this issue. But there was a proposal at the county board. They're like, hey, we're just going to do this day pass, simple thing. And when I started looking at the numbers, I was like, this is actually going to raise a lot of people's bus fares, mm-hmm. even though you're telling us that it's going to cut them or make it simpler. And so that was one of the first times that we wrote something and had an immediate impact of all that legislation just quietly went away.
Right. And I, you know, and who knows if it would have, if it wouldn't have. And it wasn't some nefarious scandal you'd uncovered. It was just somebody with an idea that was going to solve one problem and create another, basically.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think anyone approached it with bad intentions. I just don't think it was fully thought out. And when we tried to actually do that work, it was, 31% of people, I think it was, were going to see their fare increased.
And does that just come naturally to you because of the way your mind works and because you're at this point you're a trained journalist, but you weren't formally trained in journalism. You were formally trained in analyzing management and information. Does it just sort of naturally occur to you like, well, why aren't they asking this question? And what about how they could crunch this data? Do you think of that as your niche, or is that just your personality and how you're trained and what happens naturally for you?
I think one, one of the things Urban Milwaukee has always done well is provide lots of information. And I think when you and try and figure out what, not just provide information for the sake of providing information, but looking at, well, there's all these different factors you want to know about. And that, yeah, I think that goes back to my background in management information systems. I think Dave Reed, our publisher, he has that same background. Bruce Murphy is a naturally inquisitive person that likes to go against the grain. Mm-hmm. So all those things kind of feed into that cycle. We've kind of prided ourselves in really looking at government records, even as going into something like a license application for a new bar or restaurant. There's a link from that that otherwise disappears.
Yeah, well, one of the things you've done, which at the when you first did it, I didn't understand what you were doing, but now it became obvious in retrospect. You were spending all this time on a database, and it was a database of who gave money to who. And then anytime a name appears in one of your articles, you automatically get the contribution of anyone else mentioned in the articles, any historical contribution they've ever made. And so you're basically keeping data better than the government. It's government data, but the government's not having it in an accessible, easy to search way. And you basically made that database searchable.
Yeah. And we've seen what became one of your colleagues ultimately ran into some legal trouble with their campaign finance reports.
Yeah.
And we were running into trouble as well, balancing that very report. So we didn't think there was anything nefarious going on at that point. We do have this, we call it the political contribution tracker.
Well, hold that thought, because we got to do
one of the challenges we're having is it requires a lot of.
Jeremy, we got to do a quick 1 minute break. So we'll continue this conversation on the other side. We'll talk about that story Jeremy helped write and the effect he's had on City Hall coverage.
Welcome back to your last segment of The Maggie Dawn Show. One last time, I wanted to let everybody out there in Radioland know you still have one more opportunity, literally these last 8 minutes, to get in with today's word of the day for your chance to win a bike, a blender, or a trip to Chula Vista. That word is win. Just like how we hope you'll win, your word today is win. W-I-N. And someone who's been winning these whole 2 hours is Nick. And his guest, here they are for the last time today.
And I think we've fixed some technical glitches. Nick Kovac here, guest hosting the Maggie Dawn Show on Civic Media. Jeremy, are you there on the phone?
I'm here on the phone. It was very disorienting to talk and see you respond to something I said 4 seconds ago.
Yeah, so I think
glad to be in real time.
Hopefully, I think the conversation may or may not have been coherent to the listeners. If not, we'll catch up. The topic we were talking about is a really clever innovation and probably very time-consuming to execute innovation that Urban Milwaukee came up with. Where you, I'll let you finish explaining it, but you essentially created an automatic or a database that was automated. So every time you wrote an article, if anybody mentioned in the article had given money to anybody else in the article through a public, you know, campaign money that was all a public database, it would pop up in the bottom of the article.
Yeah. So before we even go into campaign data under Milwaukee, one of the special things we do is we have this thing we call the matcher. So we have this, not only do we have articles on our website, but we have this database of people, we have a database of buildings, of businesses. And so when you mention Nick Kovac in an article, it automatically bolds his name and links to it the first time he's mentioned. If you spell Nick Kovac wrong, N-I-C-K, why didn't it bold it and match it? So that it helps us internally as an editing tool. But then the nice thing that when we looked at, okay, there's all this campaign data, it kind of appears that people that own bars and gas stations tend to give money to certain people shortly before or after their vote. Can we start loading in that data? And that was this noble goal, and then we could match it. And anytime Cavalier Johnson and Nick Kovac appear in the same article, we can see that there was a $50 donation.
No, it was $10. He gave me $10. I know that because I didn't remember it, but it appeared in your article. It still appears in your articles every time we're mentioned together. So,
yeah, it'll follow you to the end of the earth. Or at least the end of an Urban Milwaukee article. But yeah, so we have this automated database. The challenge has been that the data is imperfect, that comes out, and there's multiple reasons for that, but you're doing a lot of matching we'll go to one of your former colleagues, Bob Bauman. Mm-hmm. There's an easy example there. Is he Bob or Robert? And how do you match both Bob and Robert back to the same person? But then you get into lots of other issues with addresses and trying to do matching and just it's a handwritten report. So we've tried to make decisions there and improve that, but it is a very time-consuming process. It's one of several things we're trying to really upgrade. We talked about outreach before on allowing people to give feedback direct to their representatives, but as well as allowing people to see the campaign cash flowing between different people.
Have you gotten any complaints about that from politicians who said, why are you putting me on blast like that? Or has there been reaction to that explicitly?
Never from a politician. We do get lots of complaints of, well, I don't want my donations to show up, that they want the right to speech with cash, but not for us to have speech about their cash.
Yeah. Also, so the donators often complain. That would make sense. Yeah.
Yeah, that has been where complaints have arisen. There's lots of people that don't understand freedom of speech applies to me being able to mention your name in an article if you objectively and factually do something.
So I asked before the break a little bit, are there some hot button issues? And we only have a couple minutes left, but are there some that you predict? Because you mentioned you're going to try to re-bring up this mechanism of having people read your article and then provide feedback to the people that article was describing, those decision makers, so they can affect the news. They can make the next article different by affecting the news. What are some of these hot button issues in the next few months do you think that might be necessary for, whether it's city, state, federal, you know, anything, county?
Well, the first thing that we're focused on internally at Urban Milwaukee is really upgrading what we provide. So we're going to roll out features to our members, our paid subscribers, that include maps that go with articles, direct links to legislation. Some of that's there right now, but we want to really both make those tools better and make them more accessible to members. Then we'll be rolling out, we're calling an insider feed right now, but for our members, the ability to get little extra nuggets, that, hey, Nick Kovac comes to a budget meeting and he drops this fact. It's not going to become a full article, but we can mention a paragraph about it, link back to maybe some past relevant coverage. So try and provide more comprehensive coverage and a better experience for the reader. And then I think there are hot button issues coming down. There's a big decision about what to do with what today is the decrepit state of Northridge Mall, which is going to be 50 acres of land to make a big decision on. There is an election coming up in just a couple of weeks that's going to have a huge impact on city government because there's at least 3 of the 15 council members not running for re-election.
Yes.
A couple comptroller, all kinds of moving pieces there. And then there's just a lot to do as the budget will be here before we know it, as you of all people know best.
As far as I'm concerned, the budget's already here. But, yeah, it'll be a few months before it gets very public. But, yeah.
So there will be an endless shortage of things to talk about.
And yeah, so you obviously there's the big election. You said you mentioned that there's a mayor election. There's alderpersons on the ballot. There's a comptroller, treasurer, city attorney. Those are your big citywide electeds. That's coming up. There's a statewide referendum, which I had forgotten about. Dan Schaefer reminded me of that. And then obviously there'll be big elections in the fall for state and federal office. But your focus really does remain on the local beat, right? Are you going to get too mixed up in the state elections or the federal elections?
They inevitably have an impact locally. In our coverage of going back to 2020, our coverage of the presidential election is through the process of what happens in the middle of the night with what people mischaracterize as a ballot dump.
Right.
But really just openly covering the process by which the absentee ballots are counted. There is this thing called the RNC coming to town.
Yes.
So that'll be an all-consuming July affair. But how does Urban Milwaukee cover that different than CNN? I'm not going to be giving you analysis of Trump's speech, but I want to show you the impact on the city. I want to tell you who's there, that local figures you might know. And I want to tell you where Rudy Giuliani's going out to eat downtown. So those kind of things that are of more interest probably to a local, to a Milwaukee resident, to a Wisconsin resident, and it's something that CNN isn't going to give you.
Well, you may have just made listeners of Civic Media interested in the Republican National Convention in a way that they weren't before. So, yeah, we don't want to hear about Trump's speech, but we do want to know, we want the gossip. Where are people enjoying Milwaukee and how and why, no matter what their political opinions are? It'll be interesting to have all those people downtown And it'll be really interesting to hear your coverage of it. And we just have a couple seconds or about a minute left. And just really want to thank you, Jeremy, and all my guests for coming on. I want to thank Maggie Dawn and Civic Media for giving us this opportunity. And I hope I hope the discussion we've had has made it clear that local media really does matter. The Journal Sentinel still matters. The big TV stations still matter. They're still out there. But there's a niche now where a lot of young up-and-coming our professionals, like you heard from today, who otherwise might be working for major media in 2024, are doing their own thing, and that's not all bad. I think it's good that we have such a diverse stream of voices, and we've heard from them. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you to all my guests for coming on and letting us know how you can be better consumers of news and better voters and better citizens. So thank you, everybody, on Civic Media. We'll see you tomorrow. Right in hell. Hey, I'm going to keep running because the winner don't quit on themselves.